Good day. This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, February 27th, 2014. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead, the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission makes strides toward the purchase of new property in Newton County in hopes of developing more of a presence in that area.
And portions of a sizable rewards grant are awarded to schools in perhaps an unlikely district.
Plus, we'll talk with young members of the regional champion archery team to learn how they mark their anchors and more. But first, Arkansas lawmakers are still at a standstill in finding enough support to pass the appropriation bill for the private option. But opponents of the program are meeting with House leadership to find a way to break the budget stalemate. Yesterday, House Speaker Davy Carter told reporters he's meeting with opponents of the health care program to discuss options. Speaker Carter says he's still sure there is not enough support in his chamber to take up some opponents' proposals to further amend the private option bill.
And if the votes aren't there to do that, I think at some point, you know, you'll come to the conclusion that there really aren't any other viable alternatives. Now, I concluded that earlier, but I'm certainly willing to sit down and talk about any ideas that may, you know, that anybody has. I mean, I've always been willing to do that. I mean, we've always been willing to do that.
Republican State Representative Bruce Cozart, who opposes the bill, is one of those meeting with the speaker. He says he and the other 26 members who voted against the bill so far see a pair of possibilities if the rest of the House refuses to make changes.
You know, basically, we either make a stand and we stay and we kill the budget, or we'll, if somebody's not really strong enough, they'll step off. You know, I'm not, like I said, I'm not promoting anybody to step off because I don't want to say that, but we want to pass a budget.
Yesterday, the Arkansas Department of Human Services released figures showing about 127,000 adults have been determined eligible for health coverage under the private option so far, with 105,000 of those individuals already signed up for coverage.
In other legislative news, a House committee approved a Senate bill that would allow the Arkansas Lieutenant Governor's office to remain vacant until the November election. The House Committee on State Agencies and Governmental Affairs referred Senate Bill 139 to the full House for a vote yesterday morning. 1 week ago, the Senate unanimously passed the bill, which would prevent the need for a special election to fill the lieutenant governor's office less than a year before a new candidate is elected to the constitutional office.
A third and what's expected to be the final wave of layoffs at Little Rock-based Axiom are underway. As Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas explains, it's part of an ongoing change at the company.
The database marketer has been continuing to kind of push to realign its workforce to meet some changing industry demands. Axiom used to have its big bread and butter was from those mailing lists for that direct mail you used to get to your mailbox. That's still the case, but that type of revenue has been on the decline for them as the internet has risen, and they're really having to shift their workforce to provide labor that understands much better how to target people via the internet, via Facebook, via Twitter, and that requires a little bit different skill set than what Axiom's traditionally done.
The cut in labor is expected to save the company $20 to $30 million a year.
52 people have died from the flu this year. State epidemiologist Dirk Haslow says the flu this year is impacting more individuals under age 65 than in previous years.
The reason why people in the middle-aged adults or young adults, 25 to 65, appear to have a lot more illness is because, in general, that's a group that is highly under-vaccinated. That group has never been targeted for vaccination on the basis of their age previously. And this year we had to specifically point out that people between 25 and 50 really need to get vaccinated. They are susceptible from the flu.
Haslow says the flu shot is the best tool to minimize the chance of getting the flu and the fatality of the disease.
Bids were opened yesterday for a section of the Bella Vista Bypass. According to the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department, Kolb Grading of Weldon Spring, Missouri is the low bidder to construct the bypass section from Highway 72 North to Benton County Road 34. Kolb Grading bid just more than $52,700 for the project. The Bella Vista Bypass is a multi-phase project, the first phase of which was awarded 2 years ago as a $20 million contract for work around Hiwassee. The second phase was awarded in May 2012 for $13.5 million to continue work from Hiwassee to County Road 34. Both of those earlier phases are expected to be completed this year. All projects for building the initial two lanes of the bypass are funded by the highway sales tax approved by voters in 2012.
2013 collections for Arkansas's 2% tourism tax were a record $12.7 million. According to the City Wire, statewide collections for the year were up 2.5% from $12.4 million in 2012 revenue. Employment in the state's tourism sector reflects the increase in tourism revenue. During December, more than 103,000 people were employed in the leisure and hospitality sector in the state, up 500 from December 2012.
Seven cities around Arkansas will soon have their energy sustainability assessed as part of a University of Arkansas program. The Applied Sustainability Center in the Walton College of Business is in the second year of its Sustainable Energy Scorecards and Education for Municipalities program, which is funded by a two-year grant from the Arkansas Community Foundation. Participating in the program this year will be Eureka Springs, Hot Springs, Monticello, Mountain Home, Rogers, and Russellville. According to the university, the cities were chosen for diversity in population and utility type. Among other things, the program will give the city's baseline data on energy usage, and cities will have the option to work with UA students on energy efficiency and renewable energy projects. We'll have more about this on Monday's edition of Ozarks at Large.
40% of Arkansas is now abnormally dry, the driest the state has been since November, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. Dry areas include much of western, northwestern, and northern portions of the state, as well as areas in the Arkansas Delta. Cumulative precipitation totals for the first 2 months of the year are about 2.5 inches below average in Fayetteville, while precipitation totals are about 3 inches below average in Fort Smith.
More clouds tonight. Lows will be in the upper 20s in northwest Arkansas, mid-30s in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, cloudy in northwest Arkansas, 50% chance of rain and sleet before noon, then a slight chance of rain. Tomorrow afternoon, the highs in northwest Arkansas, upper 40s. Tomorrow's forecast for the Arkansas River Valley, cloudy, 30% chance of morning rain, highs in the lower to mid-50s. And for tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, lows between the upper 20s in northwest Arkansas to mid to upper 30s for the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. More than 200 Arkansas public schools this winter received a piece of a $7 million pie under the Arkansas School Recognition and Reward Program. As Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, two of those schools are in Huntsville's district.
Robert Allen, superintendent of Huntsville School District, announced which two schools received cash reward for excellence in student performance.
Okay, well, that was the St. Paul Elementary School and the Huntsville Middle School.
This middle school was rewarded nearly $47,000, and the elementary, more than $9,000. 2,200 students are enrolled in Huntsville Public Schools, with between 60 and 70% eligible for free or reduced lunch, Allen says. The state average is 61%.
Well, our student population, and our schools comprise both the Huntsville schools, which is four schools up here, primary, intermediate, middle school, and high school, and then two schools at St. Paul, which is about 25 miles south of us, and that's the elementary and the high school down there. The Huntsville School District is what one would call a rural district, and it comprises probably about three-quarters of Madison County. It is 757 square miles.
Nine Fayetteville schools were awarded, 10 in Bentonville and Conway, 8 in Rogers and Fort Smith, 5 in Little Rock. A regional sampling of 206 2013 reward schools out of 1,075 schools in Arkansas. The program, authorized by the state legislature and funded from state surplus, rewards public or charter schools in increments of $100 per student that excel in the top 10% of state schools in combined student performance, academic growth, or for high school graduation rates. A second-tier rewards program delivers $50 per student enrolled in the top 11 to 20% of state schools. Amounts range from $5,000 awarded to an Ozark Mountain School District high school to as much as $125,000 delivered to Valley View Elementary School in Jonesboro. So how are the two Huntsville schools spending their reward?
At the St. Paul school, it's going to be spent on technology. So that's they're going to use their entire award for that, which was $9,380, about $88 and everything. At the middle school, they're going to break it up into two categories. They are going to use a portion of it for a bonus to the faculty and staff. Now, that's a non-recurring bonus just this year. About $15,700 is used for that purpose. And then the rest of it, which is another $31,000 and change, is going to be used for basically supplies and materials. Again, some of that will be technology as well.
A committee made up of the principal, a teacher elected by the faculty, and a parent representative selected by the local parent-teacher group determine how funds are used. The Arkansas Department of Education conveys final approval. This is the second time the Arkansas School Recognition and Reward Program was enacted by authority of the state legislature. Last session, Republican State Senator Johnny Key, District 17, Mountain Home, filed a measure to reappropriate financing, establishing Act 1429.
We know that through the normal budgeting process, it is very difficult to reward and to pay tribute to those high performers. We spend a lot of time working with the lower performing students, districts, schools, because we want to bring them up. But at the same time, sometimes we have, you know, neglected those high-performing students, those high-performing schools and districts. But the governor and the legislature felt it was important that we use part of that surplus for recognizing these high-performing schools. And so that money came from excess revenue collections that Arkansas was fortunate to have after we completed funding our balanced budget.
John Hoy, Assistant Commissioner for Public School Accountability at the Arkansas Department of Education.
I imagine any time you get extra money to improve education of children, you're going to be excited if you're in this business.
In 2012, Arkansas requested a waiver from fulfilling the federal education mandate known as No Child Left Behind, which was enacted in 2001. The U.S. Department of Education says NCLB failed to recognize or reward growth in student learning or effective teaching. Programs like this in Arkansas are filling that gap now. Other states are employing reward school programs, each in different ways. Again, John Hoy with the Arkansas Department of Education.
I am glad that our legislative body and our governor saw fit to put a positive spotlight on our schools. I think there are a number of schools in our state doing a tremendous job, and I think it's great that we give them the positive praise and incentives, but I think it's also good that we are providing some financial incentives so they can continue the good work. It is very important that our kids are competitive, and it's very important that we keep pushing forward with trying to increase our achievement.
But Huntsville Superintendent Robert Allen says winning these monetary awards is truly an educational team effort.
It really is, all the way through. Obviously, you know, the principals and the faculty and staff are the ones that deserve the primary credit, and they're the ones that really become the recipients of the awards that are given.
Statistically, Arkansas rewards schools tend to be advantaged, less poor, smaller minority populations, but it's clear that small rural schools like Huntsville are excelling. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
In the final 15 minutes of Ozarks at Large, we take a trip to a roadside cafe in small-town Arkansas to learn the importance of such a community gathering place.
The post office is over across the street. Of course, I changed the front in that building. The side shed over on the right was originally put on there for a restaurant or cafe. And at one time, there used to be a garage right down here. And on this side of it was one old tin building. You remember the tin that was checked about 6 inches square everywhere? It had it on the ceilings and on the walls and everything. That was a cafe.
A stop at the Valley Inn in Hinesville, Arkansas, population 75. That's coming up on Ozarks at Large.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, what to look out for at next month's South by Southwest Festival in Austin, including new music from Jamestown Revival.
Things been moving slow.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
Listen to NPR's Here and Now this afternoon from 1 to 3 on 91.3 FM.
The Arkansas Game and Fish Commission could soon expand its presence in Newton County. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
There is a 42-acre plot of land located just north of Jasper that could soon belong to the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission. Last week, during the commission's monthly meeting, commissioners approved a budget increase of $10,000 for the real estate appraisal and other real estate costs involving the site. Keith Stevens, the Assistant Chief of Communications for the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, says the site could allow the organization to better serve visitors to the area.
Yeah, we're looking at it to possibly improve it with an education slash recreation area. We don't have a really good presence in that area at the current time, and we think that property would fulfill a need for educational purposes and conservation purposes.
Steven says the land, which is located on Arkansas Highway 7, is near the Little Buffalo.
So there would be some access to that for people who may want to kayak or canoe or fish the river. So that was one of the things that that makes it kind of enticing to us.
According to a news release, the commission will apply for a Land and Water Conservation Fund grant from the Arkansas Department of Parks and Tourism to help pay for the potential purchase of the land. The land was appraised for $277,000 in 2007, and Steven says this gives them a starting point for negotiations. Steven says they were approached about purchasing the land, and he thinks it's because local residents realize the commission's current facility is too small and a larger building is needed to accommodate visitors. Currently, the area is home to the Hillary Jones Wildlife Museum and Elk Information Center. The center's namesake was a Newton County native and avid sportsman who dreamed of elk returning to the area. According to the center's website, when Jones was appointed to a 5-year term on the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, he made this his top priority. The herd that resides in the Buffalo River area is called the Hillary Jones Elk Herd in his honor. According to a news release, the potential new facility would feature a diverse ecosystem of the area's unique geography. Plans would include a paved trail, pavilion, fishing piers, wildlife observation blinds, and canoe launch areas. Steven says they rent a piece of property in Jasper, so purchasing these 42 acres would give the organization the opportunity to own a plot of land that they could develop. Steven says having the potential to build a larger facility would be of great benefit to a number of people.
Just for the local kids, school kids that come in and maybe want to learn a little bit about Arkansas geography, resource management that the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission is involved in, we would be able to accommodate classes, which we can't do now. Tourists that come through the area, you know, they're interested in the area. It's really popular with the Buffalo River there and the elk herd, and it would give them an opportunity to find out a little bit more information on the area.
For more information, you can visit agfc.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
It is 3:00 in the afternoon at Butterfield Trail Elementary in Fayetteville. Hordes of school children run in various directions. Some to a bus, others to the line for car pickup, while others yet head to the cafeteria for the after-school program. Yet 24 of these kids run to the gym, where archery practice is about to begin. The Butterfield archery team is coming off a regional win 2 weeks ago at Subiaco, and are now preparing for the state tournament in a couple more weeks in Hot Springs. Once the kids are seated on the shiny wooden gym floor, surrounding Coach Jeremy Mabry, he begins the practice with a bit of a motivational talk.
We are exactly 7, we're about 12 days away from the tournament, okay, until we shoot the state tournament. Now, I gave you a challenge going into the regional tournament. If you want to go to Hot Springs, have a good time, stay in the hotel, enjoy it, make this a fun trip. That's what we need to do. We need to shoot good at regionals. You did that. You accept the challenge, you did a great job. We had a great regionals, okay? I'm gonna give you another challenge today. If you wanna go to Nationals in Louisville, get to be gone for a few days, go on a nice trip, okay? You gotta go to work. We gotta finish, we need to finish in the top 5 of the state to guarantee ourselves to Nationals. Everybody understand? Yes, sir. That means we need to work ourselves a little bit harder than we've been working in practice. We need to focus. We need to help the person next to us.
12 square, potentially straw-stuffed targets, are lined up under one of the basketball goals in the gym. Behind them is a net, strung up to catch any wayward arrows. 10 yards in front of the white, yellow, blue, and red targets are 12 small traffic cones, each holding two sets of 5 colored arrows. The archers are broken up into sets of 2, each grabbing a bow that hangs from a rack behind the line of arrows.
All right, other than that, guys, let's go ahead and get started. Who's got their arrows at number 1? Anybody?
No.
You do?
Go ahead, go back. Just trying 10 meters. He's not scored. Find your aim point quick today.
Practice begins with a practice round, one that is not scored. The students have official archery team practice 3 times a week, and each one begins just like a tournament would. One practice round from 10 meters away from the target, followed by 3 scored rounds. The young archers then move back 5 yards to 15 yards away and do the same. One practice round followed by 3 scored plays. When all arrows have been fired, the kids rush to their targets to score and remove their arrows. As they are coupled up, the other team member counts their points to ensure honesty.
And I count hers so we don't cheat, and then she counts mine, of course, so we don't cheat. So you got 6, 7, and 9, 10.
Two girls, Amelia and Renee, show me that there are 10 rings that make the target, the outermost earning 1 point and counting up to 10 points for the centermost yellow circle. Coach Mabry encourages the students to earn 40s and above.
Hey, if we're not shooting 40s and above, we gotta do some work.
Fine. Our scoring goes for the team competition. You have to score at least, you can have as many boys and girls on the team as you want. You have to have at least 4 boys or 4 girls, because you have to have your top 4 girls score, your top 4 boys score, and then the top 4 next whatever. And they score your top 12 archers on your team.
Every kid shoots the same brand and type of bow. There are no sights, and everyone uses the same arrow. Targets are 80 centimeters across, the same that are shot in the Olympics. Archery in Arkansas public schools started about 6 years ago by the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission as Arkansas National Archery in the Schools program, which runs the tournaments and governs the game. The kids are all 4th and 5th graders, which make up the elementary age division. Coach Mabry never shot competitively, but he did grow up shooting guns and bows and arrows and is still an avid hunter. A former Ramey Junior High School football coach, Mabry started archery there at the junior high level, bringing it with him here to Butterfield when he arrived to teach PE. That was 3 years ago.
Just a great fit, and the kids loved it. We started out, this is our 3rd year. We started out the first year, probably had 45 kids try out. You can keep 24 kids for the team. And so last year we were up to about 80, and then we had some success last year. Finished in the top 10 in the state, finished 7th in the state last year, 2nd in our region. And then so we went to nationals, to the national meet for the first time last year. Had a lot of success, and all the kids here in school were super excited. And so we had 115 kids try out for 24 spots this year. So it's growing.
Tryouts are held in December before the Christmas break for the spring archery season. 10-year-old Avery Weilert remembers back to those December tryouts.
It was scary for me because there was a lot of kids watching me, and I was on the very first round, but I did good.
She was also very nervous for her first ever tournament when she shot at regionals, but says that practice makes perfect, and she likes to see herself improve.
I was freaked out because I didn't know there was going to be that many people. I did one round, and then the person who was scoring me, they messed up, so I went to a second round, and I shot way better that time.
How do you kind of focus when there's so many people?
I'll think I can do this, and I'll think about like getting my arrow in the yellow, and I usually do.
There are two other elementary schools in the Fayetteville School District that have archery teams, Vandergriff and Root. As it turns out, Coach Mabry's two brothers are the PE teachers at those schools. At regionals, Butterfield finished first, Root second, and Vandergriff third out of the six teams competing at this level. With a score of 3,079 points out of a total 3,600 points, Butterfield had the highest score out of any division. There's elementary, but they also scored higher than junior high and high school. Coach Mabry says coaching the individual in a relatively quiet sport is difficult.
You have to be kind of positive with them because, I mean, archery is such a mental sport. If you're just a little bit out of sync on a day, you can have a terrible day. And, you know, that's just what we try to get over to the kids is, you know, it's one arrow doesn't hurt you, but one group does. So you just have to go one arrow to the next and try to fix the problem that you had. And it's just about consistency. It's a lot like golf and muscle memory. It's just muscle memory. So, you know, we just shoot a lot and try to get them to get their aim spot, teach them how to aim, and just muscle mechanics of doing everything the same every single time.
After a lackluster tournament round this practice session, Coach Mabry introduces a practice to help them find their anchor point, a large, light green thumbtack-like object. Stuck into the target, the kids will aim for that small point, hoping to land all five arrows as close to it as possible. While his teammates aim at the green tack, Jackson Moore takes a second to speak with me. He has just returned from a first-place win in a tournament in Oklahoma City this past weekend. He's 10, and this is Jackson's first year on the archery team. He says he loves the versatility of the sport.
I like it. It's just that it's one of the sports I'm good at, and I like to play it around. I can play with a lot of my friends, and it's just fun to shoot around and have some fun. It's great. It's outdoors spirit. It's really fun. You can do it anywhere. You can buy a bow, go to practice outside, anywhere.
Eden Snyder earned 257 points out of a possible 300 in the regional tournament. Her secret is a steady hand and...
I aim with the tip of my arrow because then I know kind of where it's going to end up hitting.
Do you close one eye?
I do. I close my left eye.
Like many of the students here, fourth grader King Brian plays multiple sports in addition to archery, like baseball, basketball, soccer, football, swimming, and lacrosse.
Lacrosse, like shooting the ball into the goal, is sort of like it because you have to aim and depend. And like in archery, depending on how far you anchor, depends on like how far the arrow will go straight. And in lacrosse, the harder you throw, the farther it'll go.
The 24-member Butterfield Archery Team will take their bows and arrows to Hot Springs March 7th for the Arkansas National Archery in the Schools Program State Tournament. Hopeful for a top-five finish in their division, so they can head to the national tournament in Louisville in May. This is Ozarks at Large.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Christina Thomas. In just a few minutes, we hear how anonymous donors can change needy students' college experiences.
And also coming up later on this edition of Ozarks at Large, your chance to win two tickets to see Roseanne Cash at Walton Arts
Center.
That's coming up. First, a few things to take note of for tomorrow and the coming weekend. Walton Arts Center's Artist Fear Festival Orchestra's May 2011 performance of Nino Rota's Ballet Suite from La Strada will be on tomorrow's edition of Performance Today. That's a national program that's heard throughout the country. You can hear it tomorrow at 9 a.m. on KUAF.
March 1st, that Saturday, will be a day of fun-filled family activities at Hobbs State Park Conservation Area as the Friends of Hobbs celebrate the life and career of Aldo Leopold and how he shaped conservation and the modern environmental movement. Leopold is the author of Sand County Almanac. Activities include live songbird research demonstrations, kids' activities, Dutch oven demonstrations, readings of the Sand County Almanac, and a screening of the documentary Green Fire, Aldo Leopold and the Land Ethic for Our Time. This event is free and open to the public. For more, call the park 789-5000.
It's all about celebrating authors on Saturday. The Fayetteville Public Library will celebrate Read Across America with a birthday bash for Dr. Seuss. That's at 10:30 Saturday morning at the Children's Library. The party will be complete with magician Tommy Terrific, birthday cake, paint cat whiskers on faces, and small prizes for all children. And don't be surprised to see the Cat in the Hat at the party, which, if I recall, it's been a while since I read Cat in the Hat. If I recall, having the Cat in the Hat at your party is not necessarily always a good thing.
Right.
Doesn't he create chaos?
He's kind of a mess.
Okay, I'm going to have to reread that. Read Across America is the National Education Association's annual reading motivation and awareness program that calls for every child in every community to celebrate reading on March 2nd, the birthday of Theodore Geisel, also known, of course, as Dr. Seuss. The program began in 1998 with the idea of getting kids excited about reading. It's since grown into the largest celebration of reading in the country with the help of 50 national nonprofit and association partners.
Spring registration for Fayetteville's Community Gardens in the Park program is set for this Sunday, March 2nd at 1 p.m. at the Fayetteville Senior Activity and Wellness Center. The center is located at 945 South College Avenue. Community garden plots range from 30 to 100 square feet and are available at the Walker Park and Jefferson Community Gardens. Annual fees range from $15 to $40, and those include the use of water. Garden plot grants are available for those who meet certain income requirements. Spring registration is available on a first-come, first-served basis on Sunday. Expect light refreshments and opportunities to meet fellow gardeners while learning about community garden volunteer opportunities. Gardeners will receive a welcome packet and garden seeds upon registration. For more information, call Lisa Netherland at 479-444-3467.
I hate to say these words, but given the way the forecast looks, of course, you know, if the weather does anything silly, call ahead to make sure right. Any of these events are
won't
happening.
Be gardening on Sunday.
I hope it's just rain. And a number of sporting collegiate events planned this weekend. The Razorback softball team hosts the Woo Pig Fast Pitch Classic. First game for the Razorbacks, 3 o'clock Friday afternoon, they'll host Stephen F. Austin. Baseball team hosts a 3-game series against South Alabama this weekend. First pitch at Baum Stadium Friday afternoon, 3:05. Men's tennis team will host Vanderbilt Friday, Kentucky on Sunday. The men's basketball team hosts Georgia big game at 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon. And the women's basketball team will host Missouri at 2 o'clock Sunday afternoon.
And at John Brown University, the men's and women's basketball teams will host Northwood University. Saturday afternoon, the Golden Eagles will host Southwestern Assemblies of God University. Now it's time for that giveaway we talked about.
All right. This is big. Roseanne Cash, her latest CD came out earlier this year, is so far, granted, we're just 2 months in, so far my favorite CD of the year.
Really?
And I'm not just saying that. It's really, really, really good.
And she will be performing songs from that album, I believe it's next Friday evening, March 7th,
yes,
at 8 p.m.
at Walton Arts Center. The name of the CD is The River and the Thread. She's got 14 albums to her credit, 11 number one singles, a Grammy Award, 2 gold albums. And, of course, she is the eldest child of Johnny Cash.
Well, we have 2 pair of tickets to give away to that concert.
Very exciting.
Right. And so we have a question.
All right.
As Roseanne Cash, and Johnny Cash's birthday was actually yesterday.
That's what you told me, yes.
He would have been 82 years old.
All right.
So we're using the theme Cash for our trivia question today. So
I'm anxious to hear this question.
Okay. Well, according to the Federal Reserve, in months, what is the typical lifespan of a dollar bill?
So, from the time it comes out of, what, the print?
The mint.
The mint?
Mm-hmm.
Is that where they make the dollar
right.
bills? I know that's where they make mm-hmm. the coins. Okay, so by the time it comes off the conveyor belt and is cut and is in circulation till it's not in circulation.
Right, until they take it out because, you know, it's worn and it's been torn.
Sure. Okay. How many months? And we'll do closest?
Closest, yeah.
And if more than one correct answer,
put it in the ceramic cow and,
there you go.
And choose the name.
Okay.
So send your submissions to ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
In months, the average lifespan of a U.S. dollar bill.
Yep.
ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. Best of luck.
Thank you.
It is Thursday, February 27th, 2014. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and with me now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Oh, it's another Kevin Kinder speaking through my mouth.
Music.
Uncle Lucius.
I don't know who that is.
Uncle Lucius is an Americana sort of group. The Dallas Observer called the band song Keep the Wolves Away one of the best of 2013, and the Austin-based group has earned similar praise for the 2012 album And You Are Me. And he will be at George's, the band, will be at George's at 8 o'clock tonight, and tickets are $10. It's a preview for Kevin Kinder's favorite thing in the world, Wakarusa.
Sounds good. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blues Show, which airs every Friday night at 9 o'clock. Join me this Friday, and I've got a 1978 recording, Levon Helm, recording with what would be later the Blues Brothers Band, with Ernie and Earl Cade on background vocals. Also, Marsha Ball, Tedeschi Trucks Band, and blues guitarist and vocalist Carolyn Wonderland, who will make several appearances in Arkansas in the next few months. That's the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
Fayetteville Mayor Lionel Jordan has proclaimed February 24th as a month of compassion in the city. Today, we'll hear one more story of compassion on Ozarks at Large. Leslie Yingling is the director of College Access Initiative and Diversity Affairs Outreach at the University of Arkansas. Through her work, she's had the opportunity of working with first-generation and low-income students, those students who are underrepresented and have extraordinary needs, especially financial needs. Her story of compassion has to do with generous people who, though far removed from the daily life of the student in need, give to those students so that they have every opportunity every other student has for higher education.
Well, Fayetteville is a college town. When we think about college towns and the students that make them their homes for four or more years, we tend to picture familiar scenes like move-in day, students showing up with the help of their parents and SUVs and minivans overflowing with plastic storage bins and duffel bags, dorm rooms that are crowded with twin beds and little desks and miniature refrigerators and shelf-stable snacks and microwavable meals. And we assume in picturing these students, diversity, right, that the students are coming from different places, different towns and states and even nations. They look different. They dress differently. We learn lots about current trends by looking at these college students. They listen to different kinds of music and do all manners of things for fun. But what we don't always see is the socioeconomic diversity. Our pictures are not of the student who carpooled to move in because her parents don't have a vehicle or the freedom to take time off from work to drive across the state to unload one. We're not imagining the students who only bring one plastic bin, or maybe who pack in plastic bags instead. A couple years ago, I had a student arrive for move-in on a 90-something degree day in August, dressed in a t-shirt and flip-flops, totally appropriate. But if you'd been there to see her unpack, you would have seen that there was no other pair of shoes, no coat that she had packed for when it wasn't summer anymore. There's a cell phone commercial I've seen on television where mothers and fathers make video calls from home to their sons and daughters who are away at college, have just moved there. Last year, one of my new students arrived without a phone, which is almost unthinkable for us. You know, even the residence halls on campus don't have landlines anymore. For months, we could only reach this student through one of his friends or via Facebook or email when he had time to stop at a computer lab on campus to check in. It's easy to imagine students arriving on campus each semester with a schedule of classes, a room, a meal plan. But for many of our students, it's almost miraculous that those expenses are covered, and there are still lots of missing pieces, like money for books. The most assertive students might visit the library to look for a copy, or will approach the professor of a class to find out whether she or he has an extra copy to lend. But there are never enough to go around. And by the time refund checks are out and they can go to the bookstore, we're 2 weeks into the semester and they're 2 weeks behind. I see simple acts of compassion daily among those students who help each other, because they understand that experience the best. They share books and food and notes and information. But I also get to witness grand gestures of compassion by people who are far removed from those students' daily experiences. These are local people who share their success and their privilege by giving to an emergency fund that we have at Diversity Affairs to provide for students with extraordinary need. Everyone talks about the cost of higher education, and we all know that college is really expensive. But for many students, a few hundred dollars can be the difference between them staying in school and dropping out. A few thousand dollars can be life-changing. There are local people who have given generously and anonymously to the emergency fund, who have paid for shoes and the coat for the young woman that I mentioned, and helped with the startup cost to get that young man a cell phone. They can help a student get home for Christmas or get an internship for the summer. Another student who has benefited had a really rough transition here as a new freshman. He came here and everything about college was not just a wake-up call, but really a very rude awakening. The coursework, the culture, the experiences, the expectations, the expense. And every week he would come to my office and say the same thing. This is so hard. It's so hard. And it was. If his first semester was hard, his second was even harder. He failed classes and he lost his scholarship. But he didn't lose hope. He returned in the fall, but he couldn't come up with the money that it would take to pay for the previous semester and the upcoming one without the scholarship money that he had lost. He was so determined to stay, however, that he got a job on campus, and he started working 40 hours a week on campus, saving his money and making small payments to his student account, hoping to be able to enroll again the following spring. He worked hard, and aside from some money that he sent home to help his family, he saved up, but it was not going to be enough. The emergency fund gave him a fresh start. I'm just the lucky person that got to tell him about it. He's still working, but he's also back in class, feeling much more confident because he knows that someone invested in him. We can always give a student a ride to a job interview or help them study for a test, but we can't always fill the gap when it comes to their expenses. And when one of our students gets a book that would have otherwise been out of reach, they're one step closer to passing that class. These are gifts of compassion that pay for even minor expenses that enable first-generation and low-income students to stay in school and ultimately to graduate, a potentially million-dollar difference in their lives.
Leslie Yingling of Fayetteville shared her story of compassion to wrap up Fayetteville's Month of Compassion. For information on events, you can go to compassionfayetteville.wordpress.com. For more information about the Office of Diversity Affairs at the University of Arkansas, you can visit diversity.uark.edu.
Hinesville, Arkansas, population 75, surrounds old Highway 412. As you drive north, you'll pass an antique store on your left. To the right, an Arvest loan office. And just next door to that is the Ponderosa Valley Inn Cafe. Engraved in the rock above the door is the date of construction of that building, 1933. It has been many things, from a feed store to a grocery. But as far back as I can remember, that's about 30 years, it's been the Valley Inn Cafe. The recession made times tough for everyone, but especially those running a business in a rural town, and the Valley Inn closed in 2010. Last June, Sharon Evans, along with her husband, reopened the Valley Inn in an effort to revitalize the community.
And try to bring revenue into the community because it's kind of died down because of the bypass. So we decided we would redo it and open it up and see what we could do with it. So that's where we're at right now.
The bypass she's referring to is a new 412. It takes travelers around Hinesville rather than through it. Many of the diners come from areas far and wide, like Bella Vista, Red Star. And last week, they had a visitor from Romania. Growing up out Highway 45 east of Fayetteville, I stopped in for the famous pie when traveling to Eureka Springs. When the remodeling began in the beginning of 2013, there was much anticipation for the restaurant's opening.
When we were working on it, people would come by every day. How long is it going to be before you open? You know, there's actually apartments in the top of the valley here. And so we actually fixed one of the apartments already for rent, and then we'll have two more eventually.
Serving home-cooked cafe-style meals, Sharon bought the business from her niece. And being from Lowell rather than Hinesville, she had to call in reinforcements when asked about the history of the building and the Valley Inn.
Now, I'll tell you, somebody that can tell you the whole history of the Valley is A.T. Smith. And he knows everything about it, when it was and what year it was. I can actually check and see if he could come over. Because across the street.
The general store?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, you got a minute to talk to a reporter and give her the history of the valley? All right. Well, no, you come over here. She's going to talk to Lila, too.
A.T. Smith was born and raised in Hinesville and owns and runs the general store. It's across the street from the valley and up a little ways. He primarily uses the space for an office these days, but still sells fertilizer and feed. I asked A.T. if he had always had the general store.
Well, always since 1956. I bought the store in June of 56. My brother owned it 4 years before that, and Connor Mayfield owned it 28 years before that. And that was Limebarger's Dry Goods across the street there, the next door. And Connor had dry goods, and he didn't have many. He had some groceries, but not a lot. But Buck had the groceries over here.
A.T.'s great-great-grandfather was a man named Jimmy Schmidt from a small town in Germany.
And he came to New York, and he had a son, 11-year-old boy named Andy. Andy migrated to Kentucky and married Abigail Hines. Her brother was John Hines, and John Hines owned this land here. And they came here in 1828 in a covered wagon. Along about the same time, the Fitches and the Vaughns came in.
You can still see signs that say Fitch or Vaughn when in Hinesville. A.T. says this is the best farming land in Madison County, and that the bank, formerly the Valley Bank and Loan, plus the Valley Inn Cafe, were both named after the beautiful long valley Hinesville rests in. As long as he can remember, there has always been a restaurant in the town.
Oh, yes. The post office is over across the street. Of course, I changed the front in that building. The side shed over on the right was originally put on there for a restaurant or cafe. And at one time, there used to be a garage right down here. And on this side of it was an old tin building. You remember the tin that was checked about 6 inches square everywhere? It had it on the ceilings and on the walls and everything. That was a cafe. And that got moved out to my farm. It's still out there, and it's on my farm now. It's just the bottom had rotted out of it, so we just wired across with wire and poured concrete up. It's still there.
The Valley Inn Cafe has had many different owners over the years, but has been in this location for several decades. The apartments above the restaurant we mentioned earlier were, according to our local historian, A.T., used to store horses and buckies and plows.
Originally, it had an elevator back here that they pulled up with ropes, and upstairs they kept wagons, plows, everything, all kinds of hardware and stuff like that. And then Buck Vaughn wound up with Jim's dad, and he ran it, you might say, my lifetime until he sold out. And then Frank Fetters and Mildred ran it for a long time. I don't know, there may have been somebody in between, but then Shipley, I can't remember what his first name was. He ran it with the last one that had a store that I remember here.
A.T. says he never was good with names, and now more than ever, he isn't. The Valley was opened by Lloyd Lewis's wife, who needed income after Lloyd died. Not long after, she herself had a heart attack, and her daughter, Sharon, took over for a few years, leaving the Valley to be purchased by Pat and Jim Vaughn, who ran it for 18 years. You know those famous pies? The ones with the tall, light brown meringue perfectly formed atop coconut or banana cream? Those are still made by Lila Ruth Rolls, who helped make the pies with the Vaughns all those years ago.
Pat's mother, she did a lot of made the crust, and Patsy would make the filling. And then when I came in, a lot of the time, I put a lot of them in. Dolores Pascal put them together.
As I stared at two beautiful pies cooling on the counter, one lemon, one coconut, I had to ask Lila about her secret to a perfect meringue.
Well, I sprinkle a little bit of salt and put cream of tartar in it. The salt takes up the moisture. And I whip them, and I don't put a whole lot of sugar.
Jackie Carter does the cafe-style cooking, though she wouldn't give her secret for the meatloaf you can get each Thursday. It's a family-like place, and you can make a request, and she'll most likely fulfill it. The Valley Inn looks a lot like I remember it, with a nickel Coke machine and a long counter with wooden tables around. But owner Sharon Evans says much effort was put into its rebirth. In an effort to further keep the community together, the walls of the second and larger room of the cafe have been sponsored by or decorated by members of the area.
This is the crossbow wall that we actually have, and Patsy Vaughn actually was a Boette in the picture here. The center picture was actually taken by Dr. Tom Coker, who's no longer with us. I can't remember the year he passed away, but his sons are both orthopedic physicians in Fayetteville.
Resident Cornelia Davis has sponsored a wall in honor of her kids who are ropers. Barnes Forest State Auction has a portion. The end wall belongs to Sharon's niece, a rodeo girl. The Springdale Fraternal Order of Police is a supporter and has a wall. All the frames in the room were made by a close friend. And on the back wall, resting on an old antique organ, are pictures of old Hinesville.
The old Ellenberger family home, the old post office, the Copling house. Then these are actually some of the old houses that actually belonged here in Hinesville. There's the Fetter Grocery. And that picture there was Hinesville before 1900. And then the picture on the side.
Incorporated decades ago in order to secure a gas line, Hinesville currently has a mayor. A.T. Smith says that without successful business and a restaurant, the town may not last.
I run a store, and Jim Vaughn's got an antique store, and they pulled the bank out. It's a loan office now in the Valley Inn. And I was talking to Don Anderson the other day. He had cancer. And I said, hey, we can't all die. Hinesville blow up and blow away, and that's about right. When we're gone, that'll probably be it.
The Valley Inn's winter hours are Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday from 7 a.m. to 2 p.m., and Saturdays from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. On Saturday nights, you can get catfish. Come summer, they hope to be open every day. You can find them on Facebook at Ponderosa Valley Inn. This is Ozarks at Large.
Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday night from 10 till midnight. On this Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, we'll hear music from Eric Reed, Dave Liebman, and I will pay tribute to Paco de Lucia, who died tragically earlier this week, the great flamenco guitarist. All this and more, Friday at 10 p.m. on Shades of Jazz.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Mount Sherman.
Mount Sherman. Oh, on the way to Jasper.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We had the story about Newton County today. Tomorrow, mm-hmm. Dave Baer, who lives near Ponca, is our musical guest for our Friday edition of Ozarks Large. So we've got Newton County on the brain.
Well, there you go. And another concert next weekend. Roseanne Cash will be at the Walton Arts Center performing songs. She's a music artist. And we have a giveaway. Two pairs of tickets to that concert.
And the question, I love this question you came up with. According to the Federal Reserve, what is the average lifespan in months for a U.S. dollar bill? If you have a guess, go to send us your guess at ozarksatlarge@gmail.com.
And we'll announce the two winners on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
And you'll be able to pick up your tickets at Walton Arts Center at will call.
Right, the evening of the show.
ozarksatlarge@gmail.com. In months, the average lifespan, according to the Federal Reserve, of a U.S. dollar bill.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening.
Right. You'll be back tomorrow with Antoinette.
That's the plan.
All right.
All right.
Until then, thank you so much for listening. Have a good Thursday.